Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen. Our guest today is Mr. Peter Schiff. We had a great conversation with him in the first segment of today's program. And Peter, let's talk about your prediction that the Fed will continue printing money or have some other form of quantitative easing. The late economist Herbert Stein said that if something cannot go on forever, it will stop. I think we can all agree that money printing will have to stop at some point. When does the Fed stop?
Well, I don't think they do. I think they stop when the money they're printing has no more value. I mean, at some point, the dollar will lose so much value that the Fed is going to be forced to shut down the presses and let interest rates rise. And then, of course, that's when the piper really has to get paid. That's, when it hits the fan.
So what does that mean for just different asset classes moving ahead? Give us your outlook for just the U.S. stock market.
Well, the stock market is going to have two, counterbalancing forces that are going to be impacting it. One is as earnings continue to disappoint, and they have been doing that, and as the economy slows down, it's going to be hard to justify the current multiples. I mean, stock valuations are extremely high. You haven't seen valuations this high since the 1999 bubble. And so as the economy ends up being a lot weaker than is generally perceived, and as corporate earnings are a lot lower, that is going to be putting a lot of downward pressure on the stock market. On the other hand, the Fed not raising interest rates and launching another round of quantitative easing is going to act to support the stock market. So I think you're going to have stock prices trapped between those counter balancing forces. And so I think ultimately there's not a lot of downside risk in the market. I mean, I don't think the market's going to get cut in half. It would if the Fed did the right thing, but it won't do the right thing. But I don't see a lot of upside in the market either, given how expensive it already is. So I would say that, there's, modest potential. But adjusted for the decline in the dollar, that's where investors are going to get killed, because I think any increase that you get in the stock prices will be overwhelmed by the reduction in the value of the dollar. And so from a real standpoint, stock prices will go down. And if you measure stock prices in terms of gold, which I think is the ultimate arbiter of value, I think we could see a complete implosion in stock prices. I think you could see over the next 5 years an 80 to 90% decline in the Dow if you measure it in gold. So that's another way of saying, too, that the price of gold is going to go way up and the price of stocks won't.
Peter, let's dig into that, because a lot of our listeners are probably thinking, well, how do you price the Dow in gold? Well, what's that metric? How does that work? And maybe just expand on that for our listeners that might not understand that, please.
Well, you just take the Dow, which right now the Dow is about 18,000, right? And, you just divide it by the price of gold, right? And that would give you the price of the Dow expressed in gold. So if I take 18,000, right, and gold's around 1250, right? So if you take 18,000 divided by 12, maybe it's only 1230, I don't even know if it's 1250. So the Dow's about 14.6 ounces of gold. And so, well, what is that? Is that high? Is that low? Well, if you go back to other market extremes, like 1929, the Dow was worth 20 ounces of gold. So clearly, the Dow Jones is actually cheaper today in terms of gold than it was in 1929 before the market crashed. So you can see that gold has lost value. But the highest price the Dow ever got was about 42 ounces of gold in 1999-2000. So that's how expensive the market is. So right now you're talking about the Dow at about 14 and a half ounces of gold. But if you want to know how cheap it could get, in 1932 the Dow was worth about 1 ounce of gold. And in 1980, the Dow was worth about 1 ounce of gold. So if you want to look at extremes, during extreme times of extreme financial stress, whether it was the Depression and the stock market crash of 29 or the stagflation of the 1970s, right, you can get U.S. stocks, worth the Dow worth as low as an ounce of gold. So I think there's still that potential today. I think you could still see the Dow trade close to 1 ounce of gold again. It's done it a couple times before. So there is still a lot of risk. But, when you look at the Dow in terms of gold, it really gives you a better picture. Because, you could look at the Dow and say, hey, it's 18,000. and think, gee, well, that's a lot higher. The Dow has really gone up because in 1929, it was only like 350 or whatever it was. So you can think of how much it's gone down. But when you price it in gold, I mean, how much has gone up? It looks like the Dow has gone up a lot since 1929, but in fact, it's gone down, right? What's happened is that stocks have gone down since that point in time, but the dollar has gone down by an even greater degree. So by creating inflation, by debasing the money, the government creates the illusion that asset prices are rising. But in fact, they're falling. And if you use gold as your benchmark and you measure prices in gold, you take all the inflation out of it. And now you can actually see what is happening to asset prices when you strip out all the inflation. And there, it's a much different result. I mean, prices are not doing what the government wants to pretend they're doing. You know, we're actually getting poorer, but the government, through inflation, can create the illusion that we're getting richer.
So, Peter, what's your forecast for gold in nominal terms?
Well, it's higher, obviously. I mean, the price of gold is going to go higher. It's always hard to tell exactly, you know, how quickly it's going to go up and how high it's going to move. But, you know, gold prices have been rising steadily, with the exception of 2013. You know, we had the first decline, but that was the first decline since 1999. And last year it was down too, but maybe 1 or 2%. But that was only in dollars. If you measure gold in any other currency, it had a very, very good year in 2014. Thus far, it's having an excellent year in all currencies, including the dollar, in 2015. I mean, gold prices are rising faster than stock prices so far in 2015. And my expectation is for that to continue.
Well, let's talk about the future of the U.S. dollar. I think it was the Daily Reckoning. I read a report that they did a study of the first 600 fiat currencies listed alphabetically, and there was a 100% failure rate. Is that ultimately what will happen with the U.S. dollar?
Well, yeah. I mean, no fiat currency has withstood the test of time. They all get overprinted until they ultimately collapse. And, you know, the dollar is not going to be the exception to that rule. And, you know, ever since the dollar became a fiat currency, and that really happened in 1971, it has lost a tremendous amount of its value. And so it has not succeeded from that point of view, because when the dollar became a fiat currency, gold was $35 an ounce. And now it's $1,200 and change. So clearly, as measured against gold, the fiat dollar has lost a tremendous amount of its value, right? So people have been better off owning gold since 1971 than having a bank account or holding dollars. So the currency has not done well, but it still has some value. But if it goes the way of all fiat currencies, eventually it will have no value.
So, Peter, what are your favorite currencies around the world now, given that every currency in the world is a fiat currency today? What are the stronger currencies?
Yeah, you know, it's and that's it. I mean, what are the currencies that are less weak is maybe the best way to do it. I mean, because right now, real money, gold, is the best form of savings. But once you get into the fiat universe, yes, I mean, there are currencies that are going to lose less value. You can look at the Swiss franc. You can look at the Singapore dollar. You can look at the New Zealand dollar, you know, the Chinese yuan. I mean, there are currencies that you can own. And, you know, the yuan, that's also the Hong Kong dollar. You know, so there are currencies that I believe will lose a lot less of their value. But what I generally like to invest in, though, is I like to invest in the countries where I like their currency, but don't necessarily buy their currency, buy assets there that generate income in that currency. That way, you still have a hedge against inflation there. So, you know, if you like the New Zealand dollar, buy a utility in New Zealand, buy a real estate trust in New Zealand. So you're paid in New Zealand dollars, right? Your income streams are in the currency that you like, but you have an asset in that country where you can raise prices if there's inflation. You can increase what you charge your customers. And so I think that's the best way to go. And the yields today are much higher on assets than paper. You know, if you buy bonds in these countries, you won't make as much income as if you buy dividend-paying stocks. So that's what our focus is on buying dividend-paying stocks in the countries that have currencies that I think will gain in value against the dollar. And I think that strategy has done very well over time, and I expect it to continue to do well in the future. So, again, people can find out about how to buy these types of stocks at my company at Europe Pacific Capital at europac.com. EUROPAC.com.
Peter, let me ask you, do you see in the future, as fiat currencies fail, do you see any country around the world that will link their currency back to a tangible asset like gold?
Well, I think in the end, everybody will link their currency back to gold. I mean, all currencies were linked to gold until 1971 because all currencies were linked to the dollar, and the dollar is backed by gold. The dollar was redeemable in gold. So if you were in France in 1970 and, you know, you could redeem your dollars in gold bullion. You just turn it in. You got gold. It was a set rate. $35 got you an ounce of gold. And so the dollar was backing up the mark. It was backing up the franc. It was backing up all these currencies. And so all these currencies were linked to gold by having been linked to the dollar. So, you know, it worked. But then when we went off that standard, so then all currencies became complete fiat, even though they were still, in many cases, linked to the dollar or backed by the dollar. Since the dollar itself was backed by nothing, then the currencies that were backed by the dollar were also backed by nothing. And so I think when we have a global currency crisis, a dollar crisis, I do believe that countries are going to rush to reestablish their backing with gold. And I think that's why you've seen foreign central banks over the past, you know, several years have been accumulating gold, especially a lot of the emerging markets. A lot of the countries that have lots of foreign exchange reserves have been trying to increase the percentage of their reserves that are in gold because they're preparing for a return to, you know, a gold standard in some form. Because you can't just have, you know, fiat currencies. You can't have a currency backed by nothing. It doesn't work. You know, there has to be some real tangible value. I mean, money needs to be a commodity. It can't just be paper. It doesn't work that way. We know that historically. So we're going to have to go back to legitimate money, a legitimate monetary system that is based in money. You know, currency is not money. It's a money substitute, right? It's supposed to be backed by money, but now it's not. So we're trying to pretend that little pieces of paper are money, and they're not. I mean, you can spend them like money. You can, you know, keep, you know, so it has some properties that are similar to money, but it's not money. It doesn't have all the properties that you need to have in order to be money.
Well, our guest today has been Mr. Peter Schiff. Peter, thank you for joining us. Always a pleasure to have you on the program. We hope you'll come back.
Oh, anytime. Take care.
Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio podcast. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen, and thanks to special guest Mr. Peter Schiff for joining us today. You know, on the first podcast this week, welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. Glad you're with me today. And thanks again to special guest today, Mr. Peter Schiff, for joining us. In the second segment of today's program, I talked about a syndicated column written by a guy who gives money advice on the radio. In fact, more specifically, he gives advice on how to get out of debt. And as I mentioned previously, I have a great deal of respect for the advice that this particular person gives in that particular narrow category. However, if you're just joining us, let me share with you a question submitted by a column reader and the answer given by this guy who gives money advice on the radio. Here's the question. I'm retired. And currently I have about 5% of my retirement savings in gold and silver I've been acquiring over the last few years. I've seen gold prices decline significantly, and I'm wondering if I should hang on to it as a safety factor in the event the economy goes bad in a hurry. I want to make sure I'll still have a safety factor and something of value if that were to happen. And here's the answer by the guy who gives money advice on the radio. What's the safety factor here? And if everything goes downhill, why does it have value? Gold has this weird allure and mythology around it that says, I've still got something that people will take when the economy crashes. But the truth is, there hasn't been an instance when people use gold as a medium of exchange in a crashed or failed economy since the Roman Empire. Now, I talked about this previously. I talked about the fact and gave you just four examples. I gave you two examples when gold was used as a medium of exchange in a crashed economy, and that was in 18th century France. In the early 1700s, after John Law's economy crashed, gold was once again used as a medium of exchange. It was used in commerce. That's how you did business with people. The same thing happened in the late 1700s when the money system once again failed. Napoleon took power, and Napoleon said that he would never use paper money. He would use only gold or silver. So there's two instances in one country inside of 100 years that this guy who gives money advice on the radio got it wrong. Then we looked at the United States. In the Long Depression of 1873, which was really caused by easy money and credit excesses and excessive printing of paper money in the 1860s, gold was once again re-implemented as a means of commerce in 1879. Then after money printing by the Federal Reserve had prosperity seemingly everywhere in the 1920s, after the Great Depression and World War II, as part of the Bretton Woods Agreement, the U.S. dollar linked to gold was once again used as a medium of exchange. So there's another two examples within 100 years in a different country in the United States. There are many others. This guy who gives money advice on the radio goes on in his answer to say that people still use gold because they believe in it. We also believe in green paper with presidents' faces on it. So gold really has no more intrinsic value than that green paper. Well, I'm not sure that this gentleman understands the definition of intrinsic. In preparation for today's program, I went to the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, and I found this definition for intrinsic: belonging to the essential nature or constitution of a thing is the definition, according to Merriam-Webster, of the word intrinsic. So in other words, it's the stuff that makes up something. Well, to say that gold and green paper really have the same intrinsic value is ludicrous. Make a ring out of green paper and see how long it lasts. Make a ring out of gold and see how long it lasts. Give your significant other or spouse a ring made out of green paper or a ring made out of gold and see which one is appreciated more. Gold has significantly more intrinsic value than green paper. Green paper has really zero intrinsic value. Now, this guy goes on to say, in a completely failed economy, the first step is usually a takeover by a fascist government. After that, you get a new color of money, of paper, with a new leader's face on it. Then the old stuff isn't worth anything. It's very seldom, he said, that you see gold come to the rescue. And we know now from our discussion that that's simply not true. Now, he goes on to say that I don't believe investing in gold for that reason. Plus, the track record on gold, as far as a rate of return, is horrible over the long haul. Is that true? Well, I thought I would do some research to share with you on today's program. Think for a minute, or consider for a moment, the period of time from 1980 to the present. Gold in 1980 was about $850 an ounce. Today it's about $1,211 an ounce as I record this. That's an increase of about 1.5 times. The Dow was at about the same level, but now the Dow is at about 18,000. So that's an increase of about 20 times. So looking at it from 1980 to the present, one might say, you know what? This guy who gives money advice on the radio that I'm quoting in this column may have a point. However, let's look at it from a couple other perspectives. Let's go back to 1971 and consider gold and stocks over an even longer time frame. In 1971, gold sold for $35 an ounce. Today, as I just mentioned, gold is north of $1,200. In 1971, the Dow was at about 900, just like it was in 1980. Today, the Dow is about 18,000. That's an increase of about 20-fold when compared to gold's almost 35-fold. A $10,000 investment in gold in 1971 would today be worth about $346,000. A $10,000 investment in the Dow in 1971 would today be worth about $200,000. Although this is for discussion's sake only, you cannot invest directly in the Dow. Gold from 2000 to the present. Take the last 15 years. Gold's gone from $250 an ounce all the way up to $1,211. That's almost a five-fold increase. The Dow has gone from 12,000 to 18,000. That's an increase of about 1.5 times. So from my experience and from my research, there are certain time frames when it makes sense to own gold and certain time frames when it makes sense to own stocks, and they're rarely the same time frames. However, this misinformation, in my view, really demonstrates the difference between currency and money and the lack of understanding that many folks have of the differences between currency and money. So what is the difference between currency and money? And where do we go from here? Well, Winston Churchill said, "History is the best educator. The further you look into the past, the further you can see into the future." Well, currency has a very simple definition. Currency is a medium of exchange, a unit of account. It's portable, durable, divisible, and fungible. And by fungible, I mean each unit is the same as the next. A dollar in my pocket buys the same as a dollar in your pocket. Money is all those things as well. Money is a medium of exchange, a unit of account, portable, durable, divisible, and fungible. Plus, money is a store of value over a long period of time. Here's the facts. Governments can print more currency. Because governments can print more and more currency and dilute the currency supply, wealth is transferred from you and your bank account in the form of decreased buying power and is transferred to the government and the banking system. Governments have been printing currency for more than 2,500 years. This cycle keeps repeating itself, and we call it the currency money cycle. At some points historically, currency and money are the same thing. Currency and money are the same thing when gold and silver circulate as currency. However, when paper money replaces gold and silver now, currency and money are not the same thing. From really 1933 to the present, the dollar as a currency has lost over 95% of its purchasing power. By contrast, look at how money has held its value. In 1984, the cost of a gallon of gasoline was about $1.20, so to fill up a 15-gallon gas tank, it would cost you about $18. Today, the cost of a gallon of gasoline is about $2.50. It'll cost you just over $30 to fill up the same gas tank. However, in 1984, it would have cost you just about 3 ounces of silver to fill up a gas tank. Silver was about $6 an ounce. Today, it would actually take less than 3 ounces of silver to fill up your gas tank because silver is now about $16.50 per ounce. That's the difference between currency and money, and it's a difference that seems subtle, but it's really big, and many folks and many financial professionals, in my view, simply don't understand that difference. I talk about this money-currency cycle in my book, New Retirement Rules, and explain many different historical instances of this money printing and how money does evolve into currency and evolve back into money over time. If you don't yet have a copy of the book, New Retirement Rules, I'd like to send you one for free. All you have to do to get it is go to the website, investingapproach.com, and I'll not only send you the book, New Retirement Rules, I'll send you a copy of the New Economy magazine, as well as an educational CD and DVD. Again, the website to request that absolutely free is investingapproach.com. That's all for this week. Tune in again next week. Bye.